Hi, and welcome to the Nonstop Podcast with Pooja. With me as a third guest, I have Anugraha. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And would you like to maybe introduce yourself? What is your name?
Okay, I am Anugraha Natarajan. I am professionally a model. I'm also kind of dabbling into the visual arts of mixed media, which is photography, videography, and filmmaking. That's me, I guess.
Okay, that's sweet. And so in the sphere of these podcast series, I interview women who have some extraordinary stories to say or who are generally very inspiring on my barometer standards of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, very basic questions, right? Like you already told us that you're a model, but what do you do? What kind of modeling do you do? Who are you associated with? Would you like to tell us a little more on that?
All right. First of all, very flattered to be in the same sphere of inspiration of Pooja Damodaran.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having me. And this, I feel like is such a, it's super out of my comfort zone. And hopefully this goes really well. But yeah, to answer all the questions that you just asked me one by one. I think the lane of modeling you could call as fashion and runway modeling, which includes a little bit of editorial images as well, stuff that you see in magazines, all the beautiful images that's created by so many creatives who come together to create that one visual, which is very, it's definitely something that you grow up looking at as a child. And so that's editorial modeling, and fashion is usually the clothes, all the beautiful designers and your handbags, accessories, jewelry, makeup, and anything in that sphere of, I don't know, in that industry. And I think the other is runway modeling, which is when models are on the catwalk and they're walking, showcasing different collections that are being put up by the designers in that particular season. So that's pretty much, that sums it up.
Well, that's my first understanding of the different kinds of modeling, because I just thought all of it is, you know, one and the same. But of course, like, I'm naive about it. So what kind of modeling do you do in these categories, or do you do a bit of everything?
So more than whatever I just mentioned, there are a lot more outside. There's fitness, I think, and then there's definitely your pageants. So that's a definite different kind of modeling than what I do. So in this, the stuff that I mentioned, I usually do editorial, runway, and fashion. Editorial, the difference between all of it, if you sort of have to put a like pin on it, I think would be editorial is very creative, and it's out there. It's almost like a fantasy world that the creatives jump into to create something that people have not seen before, or create something that people have not something that people cannot just envision. You know, it's something that is an imagination. So that way, editorial that you shoot with magazines are very, it's a free space,
mm-hmm.
and it gives you a lot of free reign over mm-hmm. your capacity,
yeah,
and what you are able to do,
yeah,
what you're able to channel.
Yeah.
So that is something that is one of my favorite types of work that I get to do. And secondly would be runway. It's so fast. It's so fleeting. It's almost like a small, it's a way to kind of balance with the world, I think, because the world's also sort of fast-paced and it's always moving. So that way, a runway show is just so quick. Everyone does their own little part, and then they walk. And mm-hmm. once they're out of sight, it's out of mind.
Yeah.
I think that kind of sums up the way the world is working today.
Yeah.
And the third is the commercial modeling that you see on billboards, on ads, that like a lot of brands and fashion designers use to put their product out there.
Yeah.
So that's that's how, that's a small description of all of it, I think.
I think you did a fashion description 101 for noobs like me. So that's I think that's great. But yeah, of course, like, we know that all of this now exists, but you are very specific and you're very special. So you do also very, you are pro-inclusivity and you are associated with, I believe, an association or an agency that does a lot of uplifting of a specific kind of models. Because today we see that the modeling that, I mean, I don't know, the kind of billboards that I was raised and we were raised, we are from the same part of India. We're from Chennai.
Honestly, I feel like we should have mentioned this before, considering the, I mean, we should give like preface to where we are from.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were both brought up in Chennai. Yeah. Born in Chennai.
Yeah.
We are Tamil and we are Indian.
Yeah. Yes.
So this is almost super special because I don't know, am I like your first Indian guest?
Yeah, you're actually my first Indian guest.
No way.
Yeah, my first Chennai Tamil guest, which is, I mean, those who are from Chennai and from India and from Chennai know that we hold the hometown very dear to us and we're very rooted. We love our temples, we love our dosas and everything else, amongst everything else. So it's very special. And I know a lot of us from Chennai or Tamil speaking are across the world and like we're doing many, many cool things. And you're representing not just the brown skin, but you're also representing a community. You're probably the face of kind of the first ever inclusivity campaigns. Before I throw out some popular...
Yeah, you're throwing out some really daring words there by calling me first and everything. But no, it would be nice to let everyone know that honestly, I'm not the first and there were people before me and there will definitely be people after me. So that's...
Yeah, that's good. That's something cool. Yeah, of course. But what I really want to like talk about for the next few minutes briefly is on... what kind of inclusivity agency are you with and why is it so important for you and what kind of work do they do? And I assume that in today's time, like I said, we're so used to, you know, from especially being from India, where people would probably think that most of India is brown, right? Like that's probably a stereotypical imagination of what India is. But from the north to south, we don't just see different races. We kind of see different languages, culture, et cetera, et cetera. So within that sphere, we grew up, you know, watching women of lighter skin, even for reference, you know, on billboards, on movies, everywhere else. There is a quintessential or a conventional or a trajectory opinion about what beauty standards are. And it's quite high in India. So it took me a long time to not want to look lighter skinned or like go into or buy my first makeup product for my skin foundation because it was certainly not there when I turned, you know, 16 or 17. So how is it being in that space of finally being acknowledged, you know, that okay, there needs to be representation of every kind, you know, let it be somewhere from Chennai or somewhere from Cincinnati. Today we are in New York. So that's very special, which is where you are based off now and you work here. So yeah, let us know something about the agency and what inclusivity is.
Okay, so my mother agency is in India. They're an agency called Feet Artists. They're amazing people. They're, first of all, even before we go into the agency, they are just individually really amazing creatives.
Yeah. Yeah.
One half of Feet Artists is this amazing model who worked abroad for almost 10 years and she came back and she decided to start this agency. And the other half of Feet Artists is this amazing stylist who has worked with all of the big brands, all of the big designers from India that India had to offer. And he came together with this amazing model to start this really fresh take on a modeling agency and what they should be like, who they should represent, who they should be promoting in the mainstream fashion media in India. Representation is a very tricky word. You hear that almost everywhere, but at the same time, it's so hard to understand what exactly it could mean.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you said, being an Indian is, and seeing an Indian in the mainstream media is representation, right?
Yeah.
That's what the definition is.
Yeah.
But do we feel represented as South Indians by different, by in other Indians from different parts of the country in mainstream media? That could be a question to sort of debate. So I feel like the agency does such a good job of representing every single, you know, representing women or talent from different parts of the country, which I feel like in today's day and age is very important. And that is something that's very, it's very heartwarming to see. Because if you think about it, it can be very daunting to think of our own personal experience with mm-hmm. fashion and color and race.
Mm-hmm.
But when all of these daunting feelings come to me, I just take a step back and look at, oh, how bad was it 10 years ago, 20 yeah. years ago?
Yeah.
And how much work has this generation put into creating a safe space for light-skinned and dark-skinned people to come together?
Yeah.
So that way, spaces like this, like Feet Artists, the agency, is very special in that case. So I got signed with them when I was 19, and I've been with them for a while now. They have they placed me with different agencies abroad. They've placed me with an agency in London. They've placed me with an agency in New York. And that has led me to come here and be based out of New York and work here for New York Fashion Week.
Yeah.
So they're all just sort of, you know, domino effect.
Yeah.
You one do one good thing, one brave thing, one person does in some part of the country, that kind of ends in a Tamil woman being represented in the fashion industry here in New York, which is such a crazy world to be a part of.
So I'm sure, you know, those who are listening also like have a basic understanding of, you know, the kind of brands that are out there and the kind of, you know, fashion shows that are out there. And to say the least, I mean, I know that from knowing you as a friend that you have recently done campaigns for Jimmy Choo, Burberry, and I mean the rest of really amazing small scale and big scale artists, right? Like, so you've walked the workforce of fashion, if I'm not wrong, recently.
Yeah, it was such an amazing event that was hosted by Vogue India and their new editor-in-chief, which her name is Rochelle, and she is this really strong woman who is now helming the biggest magazine of the country, which is Vogue.
Yeah.
So I actually had a chance to meet her here in New York as well. And she was beaming with pride seeing me here. It's just moments like that, that kind of like, it sinks in, right? Oh, you're here in the same spaces of people with power, which is a very good feeling.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us about what kind of fashion weeks that you've been to of late. Because, of course, I need to bring in some commercial aspects to balance our very high emotional Tamil being represented situation, which is great. But I also think that just as a person, you know, like as we kind of grow in our career, it's also important to note milestones. For those who just know from an outside world of fashion, of course, like I think these standards or these kind of like marks really matter to them, like these milestones of walking certain fashion shows and fashion show weeks. And so let us know, how has your experience been? Firstly, what are the many amazing walks you've made in many fashion weeks and some of your highlights from there?
Okay. Runway modeling is almost, I think, something that is a little high pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually my first fashion week, which was New York Fashion Week. And I got to work with Prabal Gurung, who is a Nepali American fashion designer. And that was my first show this season, which was almost very special that way.
Okay.
And after that, I got to work with this amazing brand who is one of the favorites of a lot of Indian stylists. It's called Ekhouse Lata.
Okay.
And my agency was so pumped that I was getting to walk that show. So they were such a great energy team to work with. And I also did two other shows, one for Sandy Liang and the other one was for this rising designer from Kazakhstan. Wow. This was her first season presenting in New York Fashion Week, and her name is Meruet Tolgin.
Mm-hmm.
So that it was a great way to finish Fashion Week, I think. I unfortunately wasn't able to do London and Paris this time because of the prior commitments here with my agency in New York. That would be amazing to do like the whole stint, you know?
Yeah.
The New York Fashion Week,
yeah.
Milan,
yeah.
London, yeah. Paris. All
but you have done Paris and London, yeah?
Yeah. I've done London Fashion Week, which was... I think it was a couple of years ago when it was my first time in London, and I got to work for Pronounce, and I got to work for Charles Jeffrey Loverboy. That's the name of the brand.
Yeah.
And Paris, I've worked with Issa Boulder.
Oh, wow.
So that was last Fashion Week.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That sounds great, you know, like for me, that just sounds like, wow, you've done this and that and that and that, and everything sounds great. So tell us about, I'm sure runway walking and fashion and all of that takes also a lot of training goes into it, right? Like, I mean, for somebody from just a basic understanding of it, you walk and you already mentioned that you need a catwalk. Mm-hmm. So tell us what really is catwalking and what kind of training goes into this? Like, what do you eat in a day?
Oh my God. Honestly, I don't think I would associate the word training with the same thing. I grew up as an athlete, so I'm sort of just kind of skating on that whole metabolic boost that you get.
And you don't gain anything. Yeah,
yeah, but at the same time, you kind of have to just listen to your body. Yeah. And I feel like you just need to do what you have to do to have like a good physical and mental health. And I think that sort of applies to every profession. But when it specifically comes to modeling, the beauty standards are sometimes restricting. But I think I am a little fortunate enough to be associated with agencies who are sort of not controlling in the way where you have to stick to a certain diet or a certain routine, certain weight levels. So, which is all something that used to exist in the industry before. So that way we have come a good long way from the kind of thought processes that was governing the fashion industry. So I don't really try and be very restrictive about what I eat and stuff. And considering that I get to travel and go to all of these beautiful places, I do indulge in all of the things that are famous for, like our bagel this morning.
Yeah, yeah, we had a bagel before we came here. Guilty pleasures. But yeah, so I'm just generally a question on like, every industry has a facade of things, you know, that goes behind and beneath and all of that. So you rightly mentioned that, you know, there have been certain strong impositions because like, you know, models are like in any other sphere of life, you know, you're required to be a certain way. You're required to be a certain, you know, inches tall. You're required to have certain width of hips or whatever. So, do you feel that it's important? Are you just represented by this agency that taps you onto shows that are very like, you know, like just focusing on all kinds of beauty? Or have you also been on like mainstream modeling situations or campaigns or assignments where certain criteria is required? And what do you feel about these criteria? Or do you just think that it's like every other sphere of careers, and this is one of those things that has been regularized?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a bit of both. There's been a balance that way, I think. But considering that the fashion industry today is not what it was 15 years ago, 5 years ago, considering the fact that there are different creatives from different walks in the fashion industry, for example, stylists, casting directors, even makeup artists, and sometimes it goes all the way up to magazine editors and even designers, they're working sort of towards this inclusivity and diversity in the industry. It's definitely something for us to look forward to because it's changing and reshaping the industry as it is. So the jobs are far and wide where you see everyone represented in the same job, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone interested in, everyone represented in the same campaign. So I feel like that's still very rare, but it's not too rare that there's no hope.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the only way that I can put it.
Yeah, but from just reading, you know, things mm-hmm. that go into being a Victoria's Secret angel or
right?
things
yeah.
like that.
These are things that we grew up looking at, watching
yeah.
as
yeah,
children.
And like many models or angels that have been a part of those campaigns have come out and said that, you know what, this is a yeah. hard route.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody talks about the kind of mental health that we're put through as artists.
Mm-hmm.
Because it also requires you to have, I mean, you need to catch your personal style, respect of what you walk. You need to be a canvas that is ready to pull off anything that's pushed onto you.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of like alters your, you know, your maybe your belief system, your personality, and many other things that could directly, you know, or proportionately affect the state of being, you know, of your mind and things mm-hmm. like that. So, I mean, have you read things that, you know, that the angels came out and said, or do you feel that there's
yeah.
finally a good thing that there are plus size angels? Or?
That's true. So every time there's someone who comes out and says and talks about their experience from so many years of modeling, and they talk about the difficulties that they faced in their career, the challenges that they were going through, and how it actually affect them physically and mentally. I think it garners, like, it gets a lot of media attention, and mainstream media definitely picks it up and it puts it out there saying that, oh, these are the hardships that people face while modeling, and this is why modeling is not something to aspire to. So they tell the world what is real. And mm-hmm. I feel like every time someone comes out and says who they are or says what they have been through, I feel like it changes and makes the world a different but still a better place.
Yeah.
And those stories and people coming forward and saying all of those things is what has led to the changes that we are seeing in the industry today,
yeah.
right now. And obviously very grateful for how that's shaping up the industry right now, in the sense that we're seeing more inclusivity, we're seeing more diversity. So I feel like it's always nice to hear people, all of their experiences.
Yeah, let's jump back also into like discussing a bit more about your work, like what it is to, I mean, for anybody who's like, you know, just like a little girl growing up, and like everybody's had like magazines at home, and like it's crazy that, you know, you've had the opportunity to work with Vogue or Burberry or Jimmy Choo. So what it is to work around these designers, like what it is like, do you work directly with, you know, the top of the staff? So are you like picked, and are you just told your assignment, and how does this work? Like,
I think it's a bit of both again.
Okay.
In cases, sometimes you are working very closely with a team of ateliers back in the studio, and you can see them hash and rehash their designs and their creations to sort of become something else. Like whatever they start with will probably not, it will definitely not be what they end with. The first prototypes, the many different prototypes that they fit on you. And then towards the end of the day, they come up with this amazing dress or this amazing outfit. So you get to see, you get to work closely with them sometimes and see what it takes and the skill it takes, the hours of labor that it takes to pull out one like outfit that goes on the runway. But other times it's mostly fleeting. You fly in the day before the shoot, you say a quick hello, hi to the team, and then the next morning you're wearing the clothes and running around the streets of the location and trying to get a great shot. So that way it's you go there, you do the shoot, and then you're out. So that way it's very short-lived.
Yeah.
But in other cases, it's more prolonged, and it's definitely very fulfilling either way.
And how does the makeup aspect of things work? Because I've been like somebody who's been very, very like, I've had a difficult relationship with the kind of skin tone that I have been, especially being raised in India. I think you constantly have to live up to the beauty standards.
Yeah.
And very until recently, I just realized that, you know, this is what it is. But I fortunately never put on things on my skin to make myself look a certain way. It just took me a long time to come to terms with that. And I'm sure you had your own, you know, struggle going through that. I just want to ask, how does the makeup aspect of things work? Like, do you keep certain features with you, or do you kind of keep constantly changing because, you know, you need to like cater to some kind of, so how does, I'm just curious, like.
It's actually always very heartbreaking to hear some, you know, or like go back to our own stories of us growing up. But in a very bittersweet way, the fashion industry or like the makeup or the cosmetics industry today is definitely not the same as it was when we were growing up.
Yeah.
Very thankful for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in today's industry, everyone sort of encourages you to bring with you your individuality and your identity and what it is about you that makes you stand out, what it is about you that makes you special. That was something, that was one of my first introductions to the industry, because coming from growing up in Chennai, not knowing like the A of fashion, going into fashion school and then getting discovered by this new agency who wanted to make me model professionally and be my mother agent, I was very thrilled. But at the same time, I was also very scared, because I know that I didn't belong in that space. I didn't have any sort of knowledge in that space. So when I first met with Smita Lasrado, who is the founder of Feet Artist, she was very vocal and she was very loud about one thing. Do not touch your eyebrows. Do not cut your hair. These are all the things that makes you special. These are all the things that that are your features that you should be proud of, that makes you stand out from the crowd. It's fine if your teeth's a little crooked. It's not something that needs to be fixed. So these are all things that you don't listen growing up.
Yeah.
And coming into an industry which is so obsessed with perfection, it's very sort of jarring to hear that. But at the same time, it's like so refreshing.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the makeup aspect of things, I always get complimented on the fact that I'm this unconventional beauty who has the eyebrows like Frida Kahlo. That's the name I hear a lot.
Yeah.
And these are things that kind of help you realize that, oh, maybe we are not obsessed with perfection anymore, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But there's still a long way to go, but we have come a long way.
Yeah. And so what kind of products goes with you? Like, I mean, I'm sure every show is different. And
yeah. So that's where the makeup artists come in, because I cannot do my makeup to save my life. I do not own makeup. I would be very lost if someone asked me to do my own
makeup. Likewise. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where they are stepping in and giving their take into how they envision the collection or the show to be. They definitely have their own stories to tell with the art form, which is makeup. One of the shows that I did recently, the makeup reference, or it shouldn't call it reference, the makeup inspiration was just a couple of words, which was, models should look like they just ran 5 blocks in New York in February. So when you just envision that look, what comes to your mind?
Sweat.
Yeah. No, you don't sweat in February.
Okay, so I don't know. I'm always sweating when I run, okay? I'm one of those weird sweat monsters. But yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know, maybe.
It's that flush glow. Pinkish look where you have like a little bit of color in your cheeks where you've just run, you're out of breath.
Yeah.
So just a little bit of that sort of, almost like that frostbite kind of look, which comes with running in the cold, I think.
Well, I think I look like a bit like, you know, this kind of like a mix between, you know, some weird version of the Hulk and maybe some kind of Chicago puppy when I finish running 5 blocks. But okay, yeah.
That's not true.
I guess to each their own. So now I know I'm not cut for this. Yeah. When someone ever comes and tells me when I'm drafting a legal document, you should look like you ran 5 blocks, I would be so worried, because I don't know what that means.
But yeah, so just these few phrases sort of like unleashes this huge level of imagination for this makeup artist to work with, and they create their magic and they tell their own story. They have their own take on what it means to look like after running 5 blocks.
Yeah.
So I feel like that way makeup plays such a big role when it comes to hair. I mean, I don't know. obviously it's probably the same in multiple cultures, yeah. but as Indians, we hold a lot of, it's almost like sacred, I think, hair in our culture. When you are born, they do, they shave the head of the baby just three times.
And then after that,
they don't, they don't let girls cut their hair. They don't, they encourage them not to because they hold a lot of values in our culture. So I feel like growing out my hair after different phases of my life of just cutting my hair short or not knowing how to care for it when I became independent and moved out of home, growing out my hair was sort of almost growth in me too, and being able to learn to care for it the way that our mothers and grandmothers used to care for it. And having come here and getting asked so much about having long hair, about getting a lot of compliments about how the hair, how my hair is so long that they've never been able to grow their hair that long. So getting such heartwarming compliments and comments kind of take you back home where having long hair is so normal. Like we see women with a hair all the way up till their hip just be braided and just be oiled and like a little flower on top. It's such a normal thing for us, but here it's so very special and it's very different. So your hair also tells a story and it's super specific and individual to you.
I think that's also because like I feel like our genetics and thanks to the weather conditions where we grew up, we were dunked with several bottles of coconut oil. So I don't even know if a dermat watches this, if she approves of all the things that our mothers and our grandmothers and like, I don't know, fathers maybe. My father poured a, I don't know, a bucket of coconut oil on my head. So yeah, I mean, it's great, right? Because we don't appreciate what we come with naturally, like our skin conditions or like, you know, the kind of like ability to like have such luscious, you know, black hair, whatever. So those who don't know you, haven't met you, know, I mean, I always see Anu having this pinnal, which in Tamil means braids, and also a little jhumka on your ears. And like, there's always like tiny bits of representation always going on, you know, like it's like
tiny bit of home that we carry with ourselves, considering that we're not home. I feel like that could be very nostalgic and very special that way.
So yeah, Anu, so I'm sure you are in this space and you're constantly surrounded not just by highly impressive people and I, you know, art of different kinds. You know, a lot of things confuse you. We come from a different walk of life. We were thrown to adapt to a kind of world here that we are quite distant from, even though we try to accelerate being on the internet age and we're all one and the same. We still find it pretty difficult. So what do you read? What kind of art are you into? And tell us a little bit about that.
This is always a struggle that I have in my head, that I find art to be the language of people that who come with all of these privileges of being exposed to it, being able to study it, being able to grow around it. Because for us growing up, like you just said, we are not surrounded by a lot of art, even though India is known to be this land of immense like culture and richness in art. We are never taught that. We are taught sciences, math, and how to. I don't know. They don't even teach us how to draw as much as they teach us math. It's definitely... I feel like the reason why they don't do it because it's not a way we could sustain ourselves in our country making art because in this world of consumerism and capitalism, art is definitely for the rich, right? And not knowing anything about art and you step out into all of this... westernized standards of living, you realize that you are falling behind and you aren't able to hold your own in this land of art. So I feel like even today, the books that I read, the music that I hear, the art that I do consume, it's definitely practical for me. It's not something that is so outside of my levels of imagination that I cannot relate or I cannot imagine it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be super practical when I say that the book that probably is very close to me or something that maybe changed my life is this book by an author. It's the book called The Craft of Use. Mm-hmm. It's something that has a lot of power when it comes to the genre of sustainability in fashion. She talks about how using your clothing is what is the most sustainable way to battle climate change or battle this huge amounts of waste that we are creating by consuming clothes. Yeah. So, like, you can see where the practicality of the book comes into play, right? Yeah. It's not something I'm not learning or reading about Da Vinci or like, it's not something that I can relate to the book in the sense that it's not too far out there that I can't relate to it. It's something that we grew up with sustainability relating to clothing and fashion in our culture by people who knew how to sew. Like my grandmother knew how to sew and she used to sew buttons if buttons fell off my grandfather's t-shirts or shirts. So this is something that hits close to home, books that I do consume.
Yeah.
And it's not something that's out there, which is not something that I can relate to.
Yeah. And I think we were getting some bagels and you also mentioned this other book about, so maybe you want to mention it yourself, like, because I found it very interesting when you did say about it.
It's called A Brief History of My, it's called The History of My Brief Body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by this indigenous author here in America. He talks about, these are all like a compilation of essays of him coming to terms with what it means to be a Native American in this world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm still not even halfway through it, but I've found it very fascinating, to say the least.
Yeah. And in terms of trends, you know, because if I have a fashionista next to me in your own capacity, and if I don't ask this question, because I generally, when I prepare for these episodes, I just wear white because I think it's the easiest thing to do. But today I even tried, I wore green because I think the next close to white, if you want to stand out, is green. Naturally, right? But tell us about what's in the trends. What do you see fashion designers like trending this season? And
oh my God, you're asking such a bad question in the sense that I'm the worst person to ask this question. You're actually, it's a really good question, but you're just asking it to the wrong person.
Okay.
I'm a little too, I shy away from trends a lot because I don't like anything that's fleeting. I like things that are strong and they're going to stay with me for a long time when it comes to pieces that I add to my wardrobe. I am very passionate about having a capsule wardrobe that serves me for all of the seasons, all of the places and all of the positions that I find myself in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
So I do try to stick to a basic wardrobe in the sense that something that will travel with me and something that will last me for a really long time, because in today's day and age, if we do get wrapped up with trends, it's probably not very financially sustainable.
Yeah.
It's definitely not mentally sustainable, because you see all of these people wearing new clothes and you are always pushed to buy and wear new clothes, and you're always going to feel like you're falling behind or you're not up to date. So I feel like it's definitely a thought process shift that we need in our generation.
So what's in, like, what are the four things in your capsule wardrobe? You know, I'm just trying to take the most of you to give it away, like ask, I mean, even for my own, understanding from an expert. So
I love a really good tailored shirt because I feel like it can last you for a really long time, and it can be styled up, styled down, it can be casual, it can be formal.
Yeah.
I love a good, nice tailored shirt. And I feel like when it comes to pants, I always keep the them wide legged. I don't do skinny jeans. That's
okay.
That may be something like of a specific taste, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure
a
lot
everyone,
of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love sneakers. I have a couple of sneakers that I always get so many uses out of.
Yeah.
And when it comes to coats, wool coat goes a long way.
Yeah.
But I try and thrift all of my pieces. And one of the first ways for me to explore a new city that I go to is definitely thrifting.
Okay.
Because I don't know, it just lets you connect with the place in a different way and not like a tourist sort of way, but in more like a local sort of way.
Yeah.
So I love finding little shops who are reselling secondhand clothes and buy from one of those. Just pick something up from there that, you know, speaks of, oh, I picked this up in Mexico, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In,
of course.
In a way like that. It connects you to the
place
that you pick it up from, and it's a story and it has value. I feel like once you connect a piece of clothing in your wardrobe with a story, it's going to last you a long time. Like, you're going to keep it around a long time because you're going to be emotionally attached to the piece rather than just physically.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. And I mean, I would also, like, I know that you have very quickly, because I know that we are pushed for time and we kind of need to, like, I would ask you as much as I want to, and I could get you to go on because you have so much to give and so much to tell, which I'm sure you will do in your own space of work. But you have some really beautiful, like, jewelry on you. I mean, it's all silver and beautiful. Do you support someone or just
all of this is just Indian from different like I said, they all have different stories to tell. I think this one I picked up in Ooty at this really beautiful homegrown store, which is like almost 120 years old, the shop itself. And this is a very traditional style of a earring called koppu. This is also something that I picked up in Ooty.
Oh, wow.
And just all of these piercings are from different places.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
when I'm traveling, Jaipur has really beautiful silver jewelry. So I pick up some of these are from Jaipur.
Wow.
This is my aunt's. This was her metti, which is something that she used to wear in her leg.
Yeah.
But she decided that she didn't want to wear it anymore. And I was like, okay, I'm going to keep this.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. So, yeah, unfortunately, we're pushed to the end of it, even though I want to keep you with me forever and ever. By the end of it, you know, it's always nice to you manifest something as with women, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of things are slightly harder than it is for us. So, who is one of the recent artists that you worked for, you've been associated with, who has really, truly inspired you? And if anyone's listening to it, you would definitely recommend them to try their work or something like that. And who is the one artist that you wish to work for of any kind, any genre, any kind of specificity?
Okay. I really, like I said before in the podcast, I was really inspired working for Meruert Tolgun, this really amazing designer up and coming from Kazakhstan. She just presented her first New York Fashion Week show, and it was such a electric experience to be backstage with her. This was her baby, right? Like, she has brought this brand up to this level of presenting in Fashion Week, which is a huge checkpoint for her and her career. So it was such a great atmosphere being backstage and feeling that electricity of passion.
Yeah.
So that was an amazing experience. And I feel like I would love to work with Phoebe Philo in the future. She did amazing when she was at Celine. She's an icon. She basically shaped the fashion industry as it is today. So it would be amazing to work for her.
And any back home Indian artists that you would like to work with? Anyone in specific that inspires you?
Oh, there are so many up-and-coming photographers who are Tamil, and they are doing amazing work. I've recently worked with this photographer called Raj Darshini on a personal project put together between us, which was creatively directed by me and her. And she shot it so beautifully in her apartment in London. I'm so excited to do post-production on it and get that out there and let, put it out there for people to see.
for those who don't know, fun fact, also Anu shot my wedding. So she's extremely creative and yeah, and I'm so happy. I just want to ask one last question, you know, like, of course, like one of the things that I missed asking, what does it take to get into these fashion weeks for designers? I mean, it's also fair to say, speak a little bit about it. How do they make the bid and how do they get into these fashion weeks?
That's a great question, but I feel like I don't have the knowledge to that like level of like.
Yeah.
I think that takes a lot of effort, and you would only assume that it takes a lot of money as well. Like, but I don't think I'm at the right space to comment on that. Yeah. Actually. Yeah.
Okay, so the only right thing to do is tell us something that holds very dear to you, which is your favorite, because I always ask, you know, what's your favorite book? What's your favorite music? To most people that are with me in this chair, but it's only fair that we introduce some of the audience to some of the, because Tamil has the best music directors, any independent artist. So which is your favorite Tamil movie and which is your favorite Tamil song? I put you in the spot.
Oh, okay. That's something to think about, I think. Actually, I grew up listening and learning Carnatic music.
Okay.
So I actually make a point to try and go to any of the concerts during
Madhuri. So those who do not know Carnatic music, it's classical music of South India. Yeah.
Yeah. So I, when you grow up listening and being a part of that culture, you kind of just want to keep that close and, you know, touch base and sort of like, exactly. It it feels, it opens up a lot of emotions in you. So whenever I go back home and if it's during the December Margari season, I try and go and attend a concert. So I feel like, this would be like the worst answer to give. I feel like everyone should listen to Emma Subbulakshmi.
Yeah, I think it's the best answer. I don't think any answer is worst answer, especially when it comes
And Shobana, all of her recitals, dance recitals, they're all so beautiful. Yeah. So I feel like now that we have the internet, everyone has the chance to just pull up YouTube and Google and search for Shobana's dance and Emma Subbulakshmi's concerts and just indulge.
Yeah. I live abroad as well. So actually, like, I don't know why I cut off from it. So maybe tomorrow morning, I should play Emma Subbulakshmi and wake, you know, everybody around me. Because that's what our mothers used to do. They used to play the loudest religious song every morning at 5 a.m. to wake us up in a very spiritual manner. So, yeah, maybe I should do that. And with that, thank you, Anu, for joining. Thank you for having me.
I was so nervous, but you made it so easy on me.
Yeah, I try, you know, after a bagel and a little bit of a power nap here and there. But yeah, jokes apart, I think it was wonderful having you here, and I wish the very best, and I think that you will do amazing things, and nothing but the best in the store for you. And I hope a lot more Subbulakshmi songs and wonderful work by your way. So I will see you guys in the next episode. Support and follow Anu. And bye-bye from New York. And thanks to Brooklyn Podcast Studio for recording this for us. So yeah, bye-bye.